Welcome, everyone, to the episode 10 of the Office Hours podcast. Today we have with us Mo, and it's going to be really fun. It's the 10th episode, kind of a mini anniversary.
Yeah.
When we started, I didn't know if it was going to get this far, but now it got this far. So
Really happy as well. Yeah, so it's really good for us. It's really good. 10 is a big number. Yeah, so I'm happy.
Yeah. I'm pretty happy too. So join us on this exciting adventure. Join the Discord, join the Telegram.
Yeah.
Listen to it on Spotify, watch it on YouTube, the whole thing.
Yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mo, let's see. What have you brought for us today?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Vasily. How are you doing, Vasily, to start with?
I'm doing well. We just had our release today after many months of very active development. The last few weeks were pretty packed. It was not erratic, but you know how these things go. You know, some requirements start surfacing that nobody really verbalized fully properly. You have to do all of these emergency fixes. You try to deploy to production and it doesn't want to, or it does something weird and everybody's kind of stressing out a little bit. It's out now, so that's exciting. We haven't had the full switch over for the domain name, so it still points to like the old website, but sometime tonight it'll flip over and, you know, hopefully it all goes well. So, but, you know, it's a long weekend. I'm taking the day off tomorrow, so even if everything goes on fire, I won't be around to witness it. Yeah.
I mean, you get some time to really relax and breathe. Like, honestly, like, I feel like this thing is really needed, you know? Like, many times we talk about, like, developer well-being, you know? Like, how to cope with different scenarios, like, different things that the job brings. For example, like, sometimes it feels like everything is going at 250 kilometers per hour and everything is just really fast, and sometimes it kind of feels like it's not even moving fast enough, like have that much to do sometimes. So
I guess it's kind of like owning a seasonal hotel. You have like summer and then it's just crazy, and then it's winter and it's barely anyone shows up, and it kind of alternates between these two. But I guess in our case, the hotel is, every once in a while, the hotel is on fire. So regardless of the season, and everyone starts running around, and you know, it's an exciting time for sure.
Yeah. You know what? I kind of enjoy the on fire season, maybe because I like the adrenaline that comes with it. You know, the fact that you feel pressure, you know, you get to solve this thing, you know, you have to be fast. Someone is waiting for you. Sometimes I feel like I really enjoy this moment, but I don't know if it's a good thing or not.
I was actually thinking about it, and I think it depends on the team. If everyone understands sort of the nature of these things and everyone's supportive, and it's like it's us versus the broken system that's on fire, that's not like helping us, and it's not like, oh, it's your fault or your fault, I'm going to point fingers, we're going to play the blame game, why the site is down or whatever. Like these two situations, they're both very stressful, but one, you can feel supported and it's like, okay, the pressure's on, now it's time to shine, let's get together, let's do this thing, versus, oh no, the blame game starts, the finger pointing starts, I have to cover my ass, and it's like completely different modalities of approaching event, like what is basically this very, very similar situation. So pick good team, folks.
Yeah,
it matters a lot.
Yeah, exactly. I think the team dynamics really plays an important role in how you manage this type of. But you know, this actually brings me to what I wanted to talk to you about today. Today I wanted to discuss development methodologies with you. You know, like so far, personally, I feel like I've experienced different types of development methodologies. But sometimes I wonder, like, you know, is this something that is like so, because I've actually been like different teams actually, and I've seen different people practice different types of methodologies A bit differently. So I'm wondering, is this just like an idea, you know, like an idea to organize the team? It's not necessarily like, how much do you think it affects the productivity of the team, really, like development methodology?
Well, are we gonna be butchering some sacred cows today?
Maybe.
I think a lot of
Maybe.
people, everybody's very opinionated about development methodologies. On top of that, for certain development methodologies, there's like a whole class of consultants. Going back to our previous topic, we were talking about consultants, like programmers being consultants, but there's also, consultants to do Scrum, consultants to do Agile, and they want to come in and they want to change the practices of how the company operates. Sometimes it's warranted, sometimes it's kind of unclear as to why they're there. I know that I'm probably gonna offend some of my friends if they're watching this, but well, it's how the situation is with these things. I remember working for a company that hired an agile consultancy to help bring everybody kind of in the new age, and it was just so sad and pathetic, and it didn't really catch on because it was like very forcibly pushed from the top down. And I think at around that time, I kind of figured out for myself that these types of initiatives have to almost come from bottom up, but they have to be supported from the top down. Like there has to be that agreement on both ends. Because ultimately, I think it's like not a battle necessarily, but it's just like the two different visions of the world, one from business side and the other one from like the development side. And I think the development methodologies are meant to equalize that impedance across that divide. So the communication lines are there, and like understanding of how things are done is there. And because ultimately, like business and dev, they talk different languages, that and they need some sort of translation layer in between. And I think development methodology is more or less like a framework that delineates these things. It delineates responsibilities, the channels, processes. The other thing too is a couple of years ago during a Polyglot conference, there was this talk about the dangers of hidden process, or like the dangers of implicit process. And one of the key ideas that was voiced during that talk was that it is better to have small and simple explicit process that is documented that everyone can refer to, rather than everybody kind of has an understanding of what the process is in their head, but it's never captured or verbalized anywhere. Because you don't really have things to fall back on. It's hard to onboard things because, like, when a new person comes in, their understanding of the process will depend on who's doing their onboarding. Because there's no explicit version, everybody has their own vision. They're like looking at it through their own lens. So there's no unifying force behind it. And ultimately, I think I don't know if it really matters what development methodology you pick, which is probably like the most controversial opinion. It's just, it has to work for you and for the team. And you can't be cargo culting. You can't just say, yeah, we'll just adopt agile and everything's going to be magically good, right? I've worked in environments where it was like pretty strict waterfall style. The requirements are gathered for months. We get like a binder this thick with everything, and then we implement and deliver, and everyone's happy and it works. The project gets off the ground. And then in other environments, it's agile. Things are in flux. Things are changing. It's kind of fast paced, and everyone's happy. But at the same time, you can also be in an agile environment and everyone's unhappy because it's just complete chaos. And you can't justify poor communication, poor people skills, poor planning, not updating every, like all of these things. You can't just say, well, we're agile, so it's kind of expected. It's like, no, not really. You still, all sides need to be balanced in that equation. So if it starts tilting toward one side, regardless of which side it's on, it's going to be very uncomfortable for everyone involved.
Yeah, I also the core ideas behind most of these methodologies, they're designed for different types of like production, but I imagine, I think like over in the course of our conversations, I think you've mentioned that you've worked with the waterfall. You mentioned the really amazing product manager that
Yes.
that you worked with when you used the
Yeah.
waterfall methodology.
Yeah.
But how do you really feel that? What is the difference in the quality of product at the end of the day? Because I also know like sometimes some people they mix merch. Merge? What's the word? Yeah, they mix it. Some people have some form of Kanban in Agile
Yeah.
or something like this. But yeah, how
Yeah.
do you feel like it affects the productivity really?
Again, I don't think that the type of the methodology you pick would necessarily affect productivity as much as willingness of people to play by the same playbook, and everybody is sensibly doing their own part. The productivity and the quality too. Because maybe in Agile, there is more sort of preponderance for saying, well, because we have to move fast, we have to sacrifice on quality or something like that. And we talked about it before, where like quality is the first thing out the door when deadlines are start pushing up. And I think the quality, overall quality, doesn't matter what methodology you pick. It matters on how well you can resist attempts to interfere with your timelines. And ultimately, it also rests like the whole thing. Now we're going to start going into these topics like estimation and things like that, because before you have a plan, you have to understand how long things take. And again, even with all of the time and experience that I've had in this industry, most people have no idea how to estimate anything. It just All of the estimates are usually wrong, and the nature of development work, it's kind of like gas. It occupies the entire volume provided to it. So, if you have to do if you have 2 hours to put a button on a page, you can do it in 2 hours. But if you have 2 weeks to put the same button on the same page, you can do it in 2 weeks. It doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, true.
And so there's also these themes of, because developers were clever, right? We want to appear better, so we would undersize things, and then we'll be under pressure. So usually it's like it's better if you under promise and over deliver, they say. But again, the problem with it is wrong estimates, and then on top of that, things start stacking on one another. It's really also difficult to parallelize work. And even if you manage to parallelize work, sometimes it doesn't work out. Like, for instance, on one of the recent projects I've been working on, we had the two sort of parallel tracks, and one was concerned with developing the controls for the application, and then the other side was more concerned with like developing the APIs. And both of those things were done based off designs and specifications provided, but because it wasn't like done as a consistent unit, it's just okay, we're going to build a bunch of components over here, and then we're going to build a bunch of APIs over here, and then we kind of try to plug them together, and because we built it based on the same design, it should roughly match. And it's true, they roughly match, but they don't exactly match, and that integration part now starts to occupy this time that wasn't necessarily planned for, because we thought, well, hey, we just have these pieces, blump, plug them in, they all mesh nicely, and off we go. And they did not mesh nicely. There's like internal inconsistencies across, there's internal inconsistencies within, right? And so you have that situation, right? You planned not precisely, which is really difficult to do. One of the best methodologies for estimating comes from a fellow I was working with. He was an architect on our team. And his whole idea was that it works best. Basically, it needs to be on a feedback loop. Like the figures have to feed into itself. And the idea is that you try to atomize it or quantize it even into the smallest identifiable chunks of work possible. Because on a grand scheme of things, that one chunk is likely going to take same amount of time regardless of where in the application it's being done. And so if you can manage to split it down to that level, you can just sum them all together and you're going to have a good enough estimate. And so you never really necessarily promise on the dates, but you promise on how big in terms of amount of chunks any particular piece of work is. And then all they should care about is how to get to the top of your queue so they get it sooner. But you never operate necessarily with dates because that's lying 99% of the time.
Yeah, but at some point, this you need the dates for the deadlines. That's the first thing. But also, I think I understood from what you said that you don't necessarily, how do you say that? Like sometimes, you know, first question, yeah? When developers actually have the unwillingness to like, or maybe it's because they are not subject experts in the team. Because I feel like if you have subject experts, we should be able to do better assumptions on how long it should take to fix a certain issue. But I think also I've seen in certain teams where like some people have like a chart for different types of issues. Let's say like it takes like certain amount of days to fix bugs or certain amount of days to do like investigations. I think maybe this can work, but I'm not even too sure because sometimes like the descriptions of the bugs or like the sizes of the bugs don't always match.
Yeah.
So that can create like some types of irregularity, like break that, you know, like make that not very consistent. I'm just not sure like whose idea was it to do like this kind of sizing? Because I don't know if it's possible to always have the same size. And right. I don't think it's effective, really, like you said.
I think a lot of these processes come from manufacturing world where everything is very quantized and very predictable. And it just doesn't work the same way in this domain, right? Because if you're working an assembly line and it has a capacity of certain number of parts per hour, you know, barring some unforeseen circumstances, it's always going to deliver that amount of parts per hour. And then, you know, you organize your logistic chain knowing how long everything takes. And there's various ways. Again, they have their own problems in that industry, but there are excellent methodologies that work for those guys. Namely, like the theory of constraints is one. Actually, even if you're not doing manufacturing, the book Critical Chain by Goldratt, I think Daniel Goldratt, Critical Chain. Yeah, it I believe that Critical Chain is the first one. It introduces the whole concept of the theory of constraints, and it really works well applied to manufacturing type stuff. But I feel like if you read it, you're going to have some ideas about software as well. So it's definitely something to look for. Good book. Really enjoyed it. Yeah. So, but in that world, it's much easier to quantify things and to quantize things and understand how long each specific thing takes and then have very predictable sort of outcomes. So for them, I think a lot of complexity depends on logistics, supply management, and changing jobs mid-flight, because that usually requires offlining and retooling huge swaths. So that like just throws a wrench into everything and everything gets mixed up, and that's where you get delays. But if you just have a line that assembles some widget and it assembles it for an entire year, every day the output is going to be like basically same. So it's really easy to predict. And the ideas, like even things like Kanban, isn't it like from automotive? There's like a lot of these, I find the methodologies, they come from like management for manufacturing. And they try to apply it to this very imprecise thing with software, because, you know, there's so many unknowns, and, you know, the unknown unknowns where they start cropping up on you and you don't even realize. Plus, the tendency for people to kind of have the sunk cost fallacy where they're like, well, I promised it yesterday, but I just need 2 more hours. And then 2 more hours turns into 3 more days, right? We talked about this before, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think also maybe your performance metrics could be tied to this. It's like how quickly do you close your tickets, right? Which is a fairly arbitrary metric, because from the point of view of how quickly you close your ticket, a ticket is a ticket is a ticket, right? They all look the same. It's just like a little square on Jira board. Who cares, right? And so if the entire team is not doing sizing and breaking down properly, those numbers can vary quite significantly. And if your performance is tied to that, that's not a good thing, ultimately, because that introduces incentives that you'd rather not have introduced. And the other thing, too, is, okay, normally, I think most software companies these days work in some sort of agile-ish type scenario. It's never, I've been in a team that tried to do like exactly by the book agile, and it was a complete shit show. So everybody rolls their flavor of agile in a way, right? And so you have the rituals, you have the intro, like the retrospectives and whatnot. And usually the retrospective is supposed to be the time to reflect and understand why certain choices were made, why estimates were estimated the way they are, why they don't align with what actually happened. So you have to kind of very go into it. And the problem with that too is like it's at the end of the cycle. So the things you were working on in the first couple of days of the first week of the 2-week cycle, you tend to not remember as much about it. So by the time you get to the end, it's like, well, I estimated it's going to take 3 days and it took me 5. Why? Maybe 3 days, 5, that's like long enough so that it's most of the time you spend on it. But if it's some tiny tasks that got kind of overblown, you might not even remember what the deal was. And if your performance is dependent on you delivering quickly, you're not necessarily going to, you know, tell on yourself about how crap you are at estimating, because that's not a good look, right? And the problem is, for this exercise, it has to be very honest. And it also has to be, it needs to be very humbling. You have to be able to admit of all of the things you did wrong so you can collectively identify the reasons and identify them in a way that it's not like pointing fingers saying, oh, you know, somebody else didn't deliver on their thing, therefore I was delayed, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's a very kind of holistic exercise. And it's really hard to pull off properly, just because people are people and they like to boast about their accomplishments and they don't like to highlight their inadequacies. So to get the useful signal out of it, you have to be really comfortable doing that and understanding that, you know, it's almost kind of like going to a confession. You need to understand that, you know, you're not going to be punished for the things you say.
You know, you mentioned that you've been in a team where like they try to practice agile like by the book. I've been in a team like that too. And to be honest with you, I didn't enjoy it as much. The work we were doing was fun, but you see, when we have this type of meetings where like it was this like for every 5-point ticket, let's say if you have a 5-point ticket, you must finish it in 5 days. And if you have a 3-point ticket, so it was equal to days.
Right.
And the thing is, like, it was then we were even working from the office. So sometimes, you know, the actual time that you actually get to do real work during the day during the 8 hours of working from the office is not equal to 8 hours, because
Yeah,
sometimes
it
like
never is.
there are different things that, so you're already losing time somehow during the day, but you are expected to finish. So for me, I felt like that numbers was not, those numbers were not adding up
Yeah.
first. And also different things happen in different in different tickets. Like
Yeah.
you might
And also depending on who's doing the ticket, it could be three for
exactly.
one and five for the other.
Exactly. So like I just felt like it wasn't, so to me every time we had that those retrospective and we have to see the reason why you did it, it's exactly the way you said it, like you know, confession, you go there like, oh, these tickets were supposed to be for 3 days but it ended up taking 6 days, so you have to explain what happened in the
Right.
ticket and why it took you more time. And it just felt a little bit of like being micromanaged a little bit,
It
like,
is.
and yeah,
Which
I
is
didn't.
like an ego bruise a little bit too, right?
Yeah,
So
exactly. A little bit.
there is a big aspect of that where, you kind of shown your inadequacies, and most people don't like that, as they should, because it's not fun. And I think also, what was I gonna say? Yeah, I was gonna mention that again, so many things go off by the wayside in a crunch. Like having a crunch is probably the worst experience for any software team, because to an outside observer, you may think, well, you just need to work a little bit harder and like maybe stay late for a couple of days. But that's not really necessarily what happens, right? Is that you start, it's like imagine you're on a blimp and you're losing altitude and you just need to start dropping anything out of the cabin to gain some altitude back, right? You need to drop all the weight. And this happens to process, this happens to quality, this happens to all the safeguards. They just get chucked out and forget about it, right? And the problem too is once you're out of it already creates this habit and expectation that these things don't matter, and you have to actively retrain people to respect those things again, which takes time. And for a manager, it's like this extra responsibility that they shouldn't have, because it is, well, like what are you gonna do, right?
Yeah, honestly, like I think when I was in this team, it was at a point in my career where like I was still really like just starting off. So I felt like that time was good to have this type of experience, because on the good side, it helped me to build my character in terms of like, you know, how long you spend on each ticket. Like from then on, I was just really used to counting it by days in my head. Even though like in the team, it's not like that. It's just like extra catalyst for me to work faster. But while I was working in that team, I remember it was just extra pressure on top of the pressure. So every day felt like an interview, you know? You feel like you're going in for a whiteboard today, because you, first of all, you have to be in the space and just finish within a certain amount of time. It's like you have a assignment deadline every day, literally, like every day. So like
Right.
it wasn't much very enjoyable. So, and that was if we were saying going by the book. And I've also been on a team where like it was Kanban, where basically you decide how long it's gonna it's supposed to take, you know,
Right.
and you just like communicate the amount of time that you need for it, and you just like go take care of everything. And about that, like that also in itself, like I don't know, I felt like it was a bit less pressure. But also sometimes, especially if you're new on the team, you know, like you probably don't know how to really estimate the amount of time it should take, really,
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you probably don't
That's
know
why
everything.
estimating in time is such a futile endeavor. I think that
Yeah.
The idea is you have to have some kind of proxy value that maybe can be translated into time using some coefficient, and that coefficient can sort of float around, like it's not fixed. And basically, in one of the companies that I worked with, there was, when we were doing estimations, we weren't trying to estimate time, but we were trying to estimate complexity as seen by the person doing the estimating. So when we're doing like throwing away, like, you know, everybody kind of simultaneously throws like one or two or three or whatever, or five. And like
the voting.
Yeah. And supposedly like the best idea is so you can throw your vote out without seeing what other people voting, because I know that, you know, some votes become very sticky. Somebody throws a two and everybody just looks at it. It's like, well, I was going to throw a three, but if this person throws a two now, like, oh, I can't understand it well enough. I have to throw it. So it gets weird. So it's better for this to be more anonymous. And then because it's complexity as it perceived by the person voting, it's like, well, if I get that task, to me, that's a five because I'm not familiar with the domain. But for a person who's been working on it for the entire last month, it may be a two because they just plugged in. They know everything about it. And then again, five is just bigger than three and less than eight. And three is bigger than two and one. And that's kind of the whole point. It's abstract. It's just five is bigger than three. So if you take a look at all of the threes we've done in the last 6 months and average it out, five is going to be longer than that. Right. And eight is going to be even longer than that. And if you're reaching in the inner domain of eight, you probably haven't done enough job decomposing because that's too big. But the problem is that, again, eventually it tends to degenerate into specific dates. And I mean, you know, from a perspective of running the business, I understand the importance of deadlines. Also from the aspect of, well, we just said the work is like gas, it'll occupy all of the time provided. So if you don't have any deadlines, if you don't have any constraints, you know, we'll still be building it basically. So there should be some deadlines, but when it comes to, you know, we have to have it by this date or else, it's like, well, you're not launching a rocket to a freaking moon and you have a launch window because, you know, the orbital mechanics dictate that you have to take a particular date, otherwise it's not going to work out. It's like, no, you're adding a button to a freaking page. You know, fair enough, you know, they have marketing budgets, marketing campaigns that launch at certain dates to, you know, but still, okay, there are deadlines like that, but they are few and far between. Most of the deadlines feel very arbitrary at best. It's just, that sounds like a good deadline. I don't know. Yeah, let's make it October 15th. Who cares? And then everyone's like, why is it October 15th? Can it be October 30th? Like, we'll just have enough time to do it right and not have to, you know, sacrifice all of those things. It's like, well, we picked October 15th and we're not going to go back on that. So, you know, now you have to do it. And there's these, again, like these weird dynamics of if you tell them that you'd rather not have it October 15th, they get really frustrated for some reason. Even though arguably there's nothing particular about that date, it was just completely arbitrary. Or at least to me, it feels like.
Well, maybe it's because, like you said, like there's the marketing team. So like there is different funnels. So just developing the product is... Maybe they already also sold. It depends. It depends many factors.
There's clearly factors and incentives, but I think sometimes there is not much more than somebody just picked a date and that's it. For some things.
We don't really have much control over that either.
Yeah, no, we have no control over that. I think so. The only amount of control is... I think that if you start sacrificing on process and quality, like opening the floodgates and allowing things that you normally wouldn't allow through the code review, you know, not doing everything that needs to be done for the definitions of done to pass, and if everything is justified by saying, oh, we're in a crunch for a deadline, you're on a fast road to not a nice place. So I think And as much as people don't do it, and as much as management hates it, I think the only thing you can reasonably cut is scope. When in doubt, always cut scope. Don't sacrifice quality. It will be really difficult to get back because, again, nobody gives us any time to do refactoring. So if at all possible, always cut scope.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But the thing is, like, yeah, like you said, like, from the business perspective, I understand the amount of, like, measuring time. It's just from developer perspective, I'm not too sure which one is more convenient. When you choose the time for yourself, or like when you're given a specific deadline, you know, for example, like I mentioned, there was a team where like you would suggest the amount of time you think you need to finish this ticket. Or, and there was this other team where like, well, a 3-day ticket, a 3-point ticket is 3 days. And the 3 days include testing and, you know, to merge, you know, the entire process.
Yeah.
So, like, probably, really, you probably have, like, 1.5 days to work. And you have to do the testing and the other part, the few other days. So, like,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure which one would be the most. I mean, I can already tell for myself, from my own opinion, I would prefer to be able to like estimate my own time, like, you know, give or take, you can add like some, but I don't know, like on the bigger view of things, like if you get to have your own tech company now, Vasily Tech, which one would you, how would you prefer your methodology, you know?
Like, oh my God, that's a really good question. I think so. Before I get to that, and I might forget to get to that, so remind me if I start veering off on a tangent. But like, one unfortunate consequence of estimating for time is that at every level, there's going to be inflation. If I think it's going to take a day, I'll say it's going to take 2 just in case.
Mm-hmm.
And so it goes. And then by the time the final time allocation for the entire project reaches the client, which could be, you know, your VP or whatever, your superior or external client or whatever, they're like, how the hell is it going to take that long, right? And so, and it's this feedback loop as well. Like every time they throw impossible deadlines at you, you start inflating your estimations to compensate for it. And it's like just going out of whack more the longer you do it. I think the idea, the idea is supposed to be that it actually converges on some small value per unit of work rather than constantly expand for the entire project, right? So you have to pick one that tends to converge for small items, because that way, you know, you'll be able to do it better. And in terms of if I run my own tech company, I don't know, with my poor estimating skills, we'll be out of business pretty soon.
But which one would you want? How would you want it though?
I mean, I'm not particular about. So we, like, there was one time where we worked on a project that was delivering really well, and it wasn't tied to any specific schedule, like cyclical schedule. It had its own internal cycles that were, it wasn't done in terms of it's done when it's ready when it's ready. You know, like if you ask some game developers, like, when is this game going to be released? It's like, it's ready when it's ready. And they take their time, right? And a lot of companies can't necessarily afford that, so they set crazy deadlines, and then the launch is complete garbage because, you know, there's bugs and all the crazy stuff and everybody hates it. And then a year later, once they finally fix everything, everyone's like, well, finally we got the game that we were promised, but now everyone has that weird taste in their mouth for a while. But I think within it, there was like multiple parallel streams where each stream would be ready when it's ready, right? But there wasn't like, oh, 2-week cycle, you know, like some guy with a drum, like bong, 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 bong. You know, every 2 weeks you release, release, release. Like, release it immediately as soon as it's done. So it was like more of a continuous delivery, continuous integration type process. And I mean, maybe it was very specific to the particular thing we were building and it wouldn't necessarily work other places. But at the time, it worked really well. I really enjoyed doing it. So maybe I'll try implementing something similar to that. But who the hell knows?
2 weeks? Every 2 weeks?
No, it wasn't every 2 weeks. It was split. Like, the features were added to the site. And if one feature takes 1 week, or if it takes half a day, just deliver it at the end of the half a day, right? Like, why wait till 2 week mark, risking merge conflicts and all that? So just get it in. Once it's done, just get it in, deploy it. Everybody rebases, and you're done with it. You don't have to be like, oh, at the end of the 2 weeks, we're preparing a release, and now all these different tickets, like, we have all these merge conflicts, and we have all this crap, and it's stressful, and, like, it's not fun. So, yeah, like, parallel long-term tracks, maybe 1 week, 2 week, 3 week long, and as soon as the things are done, get them in. We worked on a two-tier system where it was kind of like, I guess if you translate it into agile language, it would be like epics and features. So there would be parallel epics going on, and then the features would get merged into epic level and immediately deployed. And then when the entire epic was done, it would be promoted to mainline, and everybody just merges down and, like, rebases and everything. So yeah, and so if certain epic takes 2 days to complete and deliver, then hey, that was 2 days, and that's it's done. Get it in, don't wait.
Yeah, maybe I'm gonna do this the same too, because I don't think, like, every 2 weeks. It depends on how you develop and what you are actually developing, because, like, when you have, like, multiple epics like that, I don't know the things that you might have within that 2 weeks might not even be tangible enough to put, like, to life or something like that.
I think one thing that really undermines this whole thing is that the tooling and automation around it was perfect, in the sense that there was very, if no friction at all, to get something deployed. Because I've seen this situation where it's like, I noticed this weird thing on a website, but in order to fix it, I have to create a Jira ticket, I have to write the requirements, I have to story point it, I have to provide a test plan, I have to do this, I have to do that, blah, 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 I have to provide deployment plan. It's like, screw that, I'm not going to bother. Versus in that case, it's like, git branch, fix thing, blah, immediately gets tied to a ticket on a board. As soon as you commit, the ticket on a board jumps, you merge it upstream, you get it deployed. You do a command to deploy it, it's deployed 20 minutes later, it's done. And it's documented in the task system. So the tasks, okay, here's the thing. The tasks were ad hoc. If in the middle of doing something, you realize that it was decomposed and you needed to create a whole bunch of tasks, just go in. But right now it's like, this action will affect sprint scope. Are you sure you want to do that? It's like, well, I don't know now. We have our burn down charts to look at. And so the friction puts a lot of resistance to doing things like that. And in the end, again, it creates this sense of, it's like, oh man, I have to deal with all of this garbage just to fix a simple thing that can be done in 5 minutes. Now it takes half a day to go through all of the red tape. So I guess another corollary of that is, do not over inflate your process. Like, I think if you keep your process lean and agile, your team will be lean and agile.
Yeah, I agree with that totally, because sometimes it's earlier, like recently I had the conversation with someone. We were talking about how, like, you know, you have like 5 tickets where something happens, maybe shortly after a release, or maybe something, you find something in prod that you have to treat urgently, and you just have like the spike tickets and the PRs. And then you just, like, you can bypass all these like checks and just merge directly to a master branch. We're talking about it today, and we're thinking like maybe it's gonna go be a good idea. Like if you have like really, let's say, for example, good example, like let's say you forgot to add the ITNN key somewhere, like the ones that convert keys to text, and you can see the key but you don't see the text. But to really fix that, maybe you just need to write the correct description, like the correct names, and it shouldn't take like three other people to review this fix, and then you still have to go through like approval before you actually get into like marriage and like all this
Yeah.
process. But we're thinking about that.
I've been in a situation where I did a trivial fix that I have thought was trivial, and then I pushed it immediately to master, and then it broke stuff, and it would have been caught in review. So you just need to get burned by it a couple of times, and then you're like, having a process with approvals and reviews, while painful, still is a good idea. And I
Yeah,
mean,
I agree.
on the other side of these things, way back in the day, before continuous integration and before all of the fancy tools where deployment was literally FTPing a zip file to the server, I was not above SSHing directly into the machine and just poking at the code directly on the server in prod. I mean, probably not a good idea, but it worked out at the time. Could have turned into a complete disaster. Thankfully, it didn't. So, again, well, I was talking to my brother today, and I said, like, before you start breaking the rules, you have to understand what the rules are, and you have to be very well versed in the rules and why they're there. And then once you have all of that knowledge, then you can start bending and breaking them where appropriate. So I'm definitely not recommending SSHing into production system to poke at the code. Like, you actually have to know what you're doing.
Exactly. Like for me, I would prefer to have these checks, because for whatever reason, as long as the code is going to go into prod, into master, I think it should go through all the checks. Like you said, it's a little thing, but yeah, it's important because
You know what other big problem with that is these days? With the advent of CI, the damn stages take too freaking long. That's so annoying. It's like
Yeah,
I
that's
have a
true.
CI job that has like 7 or 8 stages, and some of those stages take like legit like 15 minutes. And I'm supposed to wait to merge a 3-line change for it to go through all of the rigmarole. And then it fails in some of the later stages because of some dumb reason. I'm like, oh, mother, I have to do this all over again, you know? And so trying to make your CI system lean, it's because, okay, think about it. Like, how many times do you push to your repo every day? Times the number of people on your team, times the number of minutes your CI job runs. That's a lot of hours. At the end of the month, that's like hours and hours and hours of time where people are waiting because they can't switch contexts or something. So if you're, and the thing is, it's like even booting up the VM to run the stage in the CI takes like a couple of minutes. And that is so painful. Like, I mean, we're running right now on like GitLab Enterprise, and Jesus Christ. Like, if my stage can run in 10 seconds, I'd be so happy. But even the short, like, even the stage that simply runs like linter on a code, oh, it takes several minutes, and it's just so painful. I don't know. Maybe we should stop doing linting. I mean, okay, so like, you want to do linting before it hits the repo to make sure that it's guarded, but it takes too long, because if I run the same exact command locally, it runs instantly. But if I run the command in CI, it takes 5 minutes, right? So, but if I move it to local machine, I can always just git commit dash dash no verify and off it goes, right? So you want to have this on both ends, or you want to have the discipline to for that not to happen, or maybe you need to have like spot checks or something. But yeah, make your CI pipelines fast. Everyone will thank you.
Do you have suggestions on how to make it faster? Because I think it depends on the tool, really, like on how you, but
I think it depends on a tool. And it also inherited like the worst aspect of the whole. It's like, okay, back when like Jenkins was the main player in town, back even when it was called Hudson, before it was even called Jenkins, it was like this Java tool, and it just ran scripts on a server. These days, it's like, no, we need to have a Kubernetes cluster with 25 pods, and then the CI automation layer is going to create these instances that will download Docker images, and then they'll clone your repo, and then they'll run the code. And all of a sudden, the things that takes 10 seconds now takes 5 minutes because of all these layers in between.
Five minutes.
Yeah.
Well, because,
like, okay, you have to kick off a VM to boot up for the task to run on. Then the Docker daemon needs to download the container images from the central repository to start executing it, the job itself. And then for each job, like each job runs in a Docker container too. So it has to download all of those. And it's just like, then it needs to install all of the node dependencies. So like NPM I takes like another minute to 2 minutes. And then it runs, I don't know, prettier check that runs all of like 3 seconds. But then there's this 5 minute of lead-in time for that 3 second meaningful thing to run. And it's just, if somebody makes, the thing is that if you want to make a fast system, you have to cut out all of those layers. But I understand why they're there. Like you want isolation, you want repeatability, you want security. But I don't know, sometimes the cost is too high for like the daily, for a person that commits a whole bunch of times and every commit triggers a slow ass CI job. It's insufferable.
Yeah, but you mentioned like when Jenkins, you said something that caught my attention. You said when Jenkins was the main player. Is Jenkins no longer the main player now?
Jenkins? Probably not. Well, I mean, not really. Because, well, first of all, back in the day, the Jenkins was the only player, more or less. I mean, there was like Team Foundation, but nobody knew how the hell that thing worked, so whatever. And it's only for like Microsoft's own stuff. Nothing else would work on it. But these days, you know, you have GitHub Actions, you have GitLab CI, you have Circle, you have Bamboo, you have like all of these different things. So Jenkins isn't necessarily the top player. I mean, it's still around, but I probably wouldn't. I don't know if I would. It would be my first choice.
Which number would it be on? On your list of choices? Where would you put it?
I have no idea, to be honest. I mean, I'm running Gitea locally as a Git repository, and I think they released actions recently that are compatible with like GitHub Actions. So for my personal project, I would probably roll that. But even that depends on like Docker and all the other stuff. And none of my servers have Docker on it, and I'm proud of the fact.
You know, I also wanted to, I was just thinking now, like, I wanted to ask you, like, from your experience, right? How would you categorize, like, and I know, like, being on different teams means you were working on different projects sometimes. Like, how would you categorize the different methodologies with the type of product or, like, the type of project that is the best fit for this methodology? So for example, for me, when I was doing the Kanban, it was in a media company. So it's a different type of work.
Yeah.
And when I was doing the other Agile one, it was in a ERP company where the product was pretty fast. Like a lot of people was waiting. So like the speed is different. But for you, like in your own experience, how would you categorize like different methodologies and best fit examples of products or like projects to fit these methodologies?
That's a hard question. So the waterfall approach was basically at an investment company, which is like very kind of, so I think the more regulated the industry is, the slower everything's gonna be. If they have like infinite amount of layers of compliance, the process and methodology is gonna reflect that. Like You can't do agile if you have to have some government agency inspect your work every 2 weeks. It's just not possible, right? In most cases, it was just a variant of agile. I haven't really seen anything fancy, to be honest. Like it's mostly just variants of agile. Like nobody's really doing anything that much differently. I haven't worked in Kanban myself. Or maybe I did and didn't even realize it. And again, I'm of opinion that it doesn't really matter as long as you make it work for the type. I guess your question is like, if I have a project X, what methodology should I pick?
Basically, yeah, that's what
Yeah,
I'm asking.
that's a million-dollar question. I think that unless it's a very concrete, a question about a very concrete project, like it's so abstract, it's impossible to give good answer.
So, for example, if I work in a, BP Scotiabank, for example, and you're a consultant, and then I'm asking you, like, oh, we want to build a new mobile app.
Right.
And yeah, I
Yeah.
guess we're
I think like,
deciding on the methodology to use.
so I guess, so here's the thing. I guess the first question is this a new team or existing team? Because if it's an existing team, you'd rather use the methodology that they're happy with and they're used to. Because if you try to transplant a completely new methodology for this project, you're going to have a lot of resistance. You're going to have a lot of, do you know the concept of the Italian strike?
No.
It's where you follow all of the rules exactly verbatim and then everything grinds to a halt.
Interesting.
You just follow all of the rules so nobody can ever say that you're breaking rules. It's like, no, you're following all of the rules. And because you do that, everything stops because it's impossible to do literally anything without all of the process having been repeated over and over and over again. And so it's like malicious compliance in a sense. People are following all of your rules and nothing gets done. If it's a brand new team, then you can pick a process and you hire people who like to work in that process. And then again, I think the buy-in from the people actually using is most important, not necessarily the methodology itself. Like everybody, like there needs to be alignment and there needs to be buy-in. And that's one of the reasons why I said it has to be bottom up, because people have to come up with the idea that they want a process in their team to make their life easier, right? But if you say, I'm imposing a process on you because it makes my life easier, because I can look in Jira chart and see some line go up, usually for developers, that's not a very good justification to kind of retool their thinking and their approach on how they do things. So they get very unhappy. And I think the biggest clash is there, where it's like, in this company, we were an isolated team that was building like a fully vertically integrated product that wasn't really dependent on most of the rest of the company. But after the big agile push, one of the things that the consultants sold to the management is like, hey, if we aggregate everything in Jira, now you kind of have this big picture where you see all of the teams and everything that they do. I don't know. I think because every team is doing slightly their own flavor, a lot of those numbers aren't exactly comparable to one another. So a lot of that exercising meaningless. But we were using some other ticket tracking system. I think it was like a U-Track from JetBrains or something like that. But it was not Jira. And then we were made to convert to Jira, and it was such a pain in the ass. Oh my God, everyone hated it. Everyone hated it. And that created so much friction and resistance that slowed down our processes so much because, well, we can't just edit the workflows to suit how our team operates. No, the workflows are mandated from above. So now you have to jump through all of the hoops to get your ticket moving. Like, this is probably the worst thing. So get something that works with your team that they're happy using and that they're open to modifying based on actual results, but nothing that's mandated from above saying we're doing it or else. I mean, you can always just say if you don't like it, quit, and then the people who don't like it will quit, and then you retool your team for the new tool, and everyone will be happy again. Your mileage may vary, So, yeah, I guess that's my answer.
Yeah, so you would probably not want to change much. You would want to, it depends.
You want to have it's kind of interesting. Like, if you want to have change, you almost have to make it seem like it was their idea all along. You have to plant the seeds and convince them that it will be better. And maybe very apologetically do it on a trial basis for a week with the promise to roll it back immediately after. And do it incrementally. And the things that actually, like, if you've been doing it long enough and you understand that this change makes good sense and it will change everything for the better, people are just resistant because they're just resistant. Like, people don't like change, right? They're resistant to change most of the time. And if you're just starting changing everything, like, you can't be changing everything at the same time. It's like, no, don't try to quit all of your bad habits at once. You have to do one bad habit at a time because otherwise you get overwhelmed and jump right back into it. So same thing happens here. Like, change one thing for a short amount of time. Be kind of very kind of like, let's try it. If it doesn't work, we can always go back. And the things that do work, because you understand that they would work, people will be like, that's actually not too bad. Let's stick with that. And then slowly, gradually, incrementally, without just, here's this entire codex of thou shall live life like so, go. And everyone's like, hell no, we're not doing that. Even though, like, the funny thing is if you have this year-long process of adapting how you do things, and at the end, like, you were at point A, and then through these incremental changes, you arrived at point B. If you were to grab the essence of point B and just throw it all in first week, people would be like, hell no, we're not doing that, right? So you have to understand people's psychology in that regard and be kind of slow, methodical, and make it look like it was their idea all along.
You see, this is one of the reasons why I think, like, for people to be good managers in, like, software development, I feel like you have to come through the ranks. You have to come through, like, being a developer yourself,
Yeah.
because then you will be able to understand how to, manage people, like, manage developers, or even how to help
Yeah.
a team. Because from what you're saying, it's very, like, easy to figure that you care more about, like, people. Like, the people mean more
Yeah.
to you, to your development process, than actually the look of your process, because for you it feels like the people is what makes the process.
Yeah.
So but I don't know if this is very common amongst, like,
No,
people in management,
it's not.
because they don't know what it means. So to them it's just like, you
Yeah.
can do it. Yeah, if you're good at your job, you
Yeah.
should be able to do it. Like, just,
Yeah.
like, get it done. Like,
How hard could it be?
how hard can
Yeah.
it be?
Maybe this whole podcast should be named How Hard Could It Be, you know?
probably a good name, but,
Yeah.
like, yeah, like, I feel like, to get into the ranks, like, I
Yeah.
feel it's pretty important, because I've seen the difference. Like,
Yeah.
I can tell, like, if you speak to maybe the director of, like, development or something, and you can easily tell if this person understands what it means to actually do this job, because sometimes there is difference between your ability to manage people and ability to actually manage people or specific domain. Like, and for us, like, it's different, like, understanding that people is the process really got my attention, and I
Yeah,
think that that's really good. Like,
and I think like, if you're, because I said in the beginning of this conversation that, like, it's being that interface, it's bridging the languages from both sides. So you have to know both languages, right? You have to know the business language and you have to know the developer language. And
yeah.
if you're a manager, you are the bridge, the gate, the row full of alligators, Like you're all of these things. Like you're protecting everybody behind the gate. You're gatekeeping, which is very necessary, like from all of the influences that are undue. You do not allow people to go over your head to request things. That's the worst, when people just like, I need feature X. So why are you asking me? Like, go through the channels. It's like, well, going through the channels doesn't work. I thought I'd just reach out to you directly. It's like, no, go. The thing is too, if you're a junior, and if some manager from other team is asking you stuff like this, you'd be like, of course, yes, yes, which is not the right thing to do, right? Your first response should be, talk to my manager. Like, none of that stuff. That these types of things needs to be shut down right away. In fact, it's like one of the signs of sort of the degenerated culture is if people allow themselves to do that. Because, and this thing is, it's like, it shows that the processes do not work. You know, it's kind of like, there's this picture of like a paved road and another portion of a paved road. And then there's like this walking path in the grass because people just take the shortcut every time, right? And I think, in fact, somewhere in Europe, in the university, they did this where they just planted a bunch of grass everywhere and let people go wherever. And then where the footpaths naturally ended up being, they just paved over that because that's where people walk. So that's the place where the path should be. It's not like you should go over the path over there. It's like, no, path should be here because that's where everyone's walking, right? And so if that's happening, it means that there is no, like, any developer can be affected by anywhere and he just like flips in a wind without direction. And while having footpaths where people walk is a good idea, having people interrupt you and throw work on your plate, usually it's not a good idea because that throws everything out of alignment.
Exactly. Yeah, it really does. Like, and this is something that happens a lot, especially in teams that consider themselves to be agile. You know, like someone can come to you, but these are things that you learn as a developer. I feel like every one of us has been through that stage in their careers, and like you've had to learn about this, like, because sometimes you feel like the more you take on makes you it has an effect on your output, really. But at the end of the day, you just might end up at a bottleneck and you just have too much to do, and so like I think this type of experience is something that comes with time, like comes with, you know,
it's like that joke, the horse was the hardest worker on the farm, but for some reason she didn't get promoted to management.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's going to look like, because then everybody will find it easy to come to you to like, oh, we know if it is going to do it.
So, and
like,
then you just burn out and that's
and
it.
And then you just keep, just you're the busiest person on the team, like you just keep taking responsibility. But honestly, like at the end of the day, I really think that this type of lessons, you either learn it from conversations like this, or like you learn it from personal experiences. I feel like time will just teach you at some point.
Yeah, well,
you just
experience. Yeah, it's a great teacher. I think that, like, if you have opportunities to pick up responsibilities, it's probably a good thing. Overall, just don't let people abuse the privilege, in a sense.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's the line. You see, it's different between taking responsibilities and taking on suggestions that did not pass through the right channel. You see, taking on responsibility will be like, you're responsible for this set of things, and then you can prioritize your responsibilities and then find a way to do a good job. But in a certain scenario, let's say for example, like you have some departments have different requirements and that they already plan with the product manager, and suddenly they feel like, oh, midway they can change this requirement just because they think it's just a little thing, you know, just change.
It's always just a little thing.
You know, just a little thing. And then instead of going to the product manager or like going through the process or like the team lead or whatnot, they come straight to you because they know you're the dev in charge, like you're the dev
Yeah.
working on it, and then they come like, oh, we just want to add this. How long do you think it would take to add this little thing, you know?
Yeah.
And to not to someone, especially if they're not technical, it's just a little thing. But for you, maybe you just
Some
you
little things
knew
require re-architecting the entire application. I've seen that before,
exactly.
you know.
Even if it honestly, yeah, that there is that, and even if it doesn't, I still feel like
Yeah,
yeah, it's
it
kinda
sets an unhealthy expectation.
yeah, so
Yeah.
yeah, keep doing this type of thing can lead to a certain bottleneck at some point, because then you just like keep taking little things and every little thing and every little thing,
Yeah.
and then
The last straw that broke the camel's
yeah,
back,
the
proverbially.
but I know like every developer has been through this stage before, like I feel.
Yeah. And it's funny because the longer you work in this industry, the more kind of grumpy, cynical, jaded, and assholish you become for all of the good reasons. It's like you're saying no to everything for a good reason, but from the outside, from some like fresh junior, you'd be like, "Why is this guy so mean?" It's like,
Yeah, but yeah.
yeah, you'll learn one day.
You learn, you get it. Honestly, at some point you just get it. Like, but in the beginning you want to take on, but that's the thing, like in the beginning, taking on a lot of responsibility, like taking on a lot of like small things to fix might not feel like much. Like why? Like maybe someone is just telling you, say, add this, add that, do this, do that, like it's not a problem. You
Yeah.
can, some things you can squeeze it in 1 hour, extra hour, 2 hours. It's okay.
But then the
No problem.
requests start growing in their scope, right? They
Yeah, but
never get contained to the
exactly.
tiny things.
Exactly. So now you're making the other people, the other department feel comfortable, like, oh, whenever they want to change something, they can just like come to you. Honestly,
You know,
if it works for you
yeah.
like this, then good.
As
If it's
long as
some
it doesn't run away, and as long as people are not taking too much of an advantage of you.
yeah,
But it's kind of funny,
exactly.
you know how in those books on like psychology, it's like ways to influence people, blah blah blah. It's like ask them for a small favor and they'll be like more likely to reciprocate later on. So it's the same thing. They ask you for a small
Yeah.
favor and you say yes, and then it's another. And then by the fifth favor, you kind of start feeling bad because you've been so helpful this entire time. Like, why would you say no now? Right?
Yeah.
And in fact, I think that's how, you know, like spies operate when they're trying to recruit somebody, you know, from the country that they're deployed in to be like to work off for them, right? It's always starts small. And then in
Yeah.
the end you're like, well, I feel bad to refuse this, and you know, that's where you cross the line. So, you know,
Exactly. So
don't be the person to be in a position to cross the line. So
yeah, exactly. So
that's why with experience you just shut it down right off the door so that
yeah,
there's no
just
opportunity for that BS in there.
and it's pretty easy, just like ask for the person to go through the line. Like, have
Yeah.
you talked to the PO? Have you
Yeah.
talked to this
It's
person?
like
Like, just go through the
put it in a suggestion box. We'll take it under
line.
advisement.
Yeah, like you're not saying no. You're
Yeah,
not
yeah.
saying you won't do it. You're just saying like let the other person who manages this, just let the other person do their job, because literally that's their job. That's
Yeah.
not it's not your job
Yeah.
as a dev.
Yeah, you know,
Yeah.
it's kind of funny. It's like on one hand, it is kind of very bad to, you know, litter on a street. But then on the other hand, if the city employs a person to clean the streets by not littering, wouldn't you be taking away their job? And if everybody stops littering, that person would end up being unemployed. So in a way, littering is kind of okay. I'm not saying it is, but it's a weird thought experiment. So if you say like, I don't want to take the job away from my manager, go through him, her, whoever, yeah.
You just literally go through it. Honestly, like that's the job, and
Yeah.
they'll probably do a better job, and maybe they can also do like better job at prioritizing it
Yeah.
too, because
And maybe they have better reasons why it shouldn't be done at all.
exactly. So like, you know, like I feel like it's just good for everybody, because what will be more annoying is like when you feel like you're doing something like a little thing, and then you add the little thing, and then you realize like it gets out, and then someone is asking you like, at what point did we decide to do this little thing? And now you're explaining like, oh, this person from this other team, the team lead from this other team asked to do this. Now you're explaining that and everybody's confused,
And now you are the pivot point of that whole fiasco, and you like,
Exactly. And now you have to remove it. So now you've made everybody confused and so it's just good
Don't do
to
it,
follow the
kids.
process.
Just don't do it. Just
Just
say no.
follow the process, just better. It's better. Anyway, this is it. These are the things I wanted to talk to you about today. And as always, thank you very much for your time again, Vasily.
Thank you very much, Mo. It was a fun conversation. I mean, it was a long time coming. I think maybe we haven't expanded on everything and all of the other aspects, but I'm pretty sure we'll revisit it one day.
Yeah, for sure. For
Well,
sure.
thank you everyone for joining us. We're very happy that you're with us and spent all of this time watching our content, and we hope to see you in the next one. Thank you very much and have a great day.
See you.